Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities, can transform the world, and rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome aboard.
Ahoy!
It is not Isaac and Sue. It is Buck and Sue. A Buck and Sue edition of Primetime. Schulze doing the heavy lifting behind the glass. Rop tempting fate once again in Las Vegas. He said before he left... Might be the last time. I have no belief that it'll actually be the last time.
Well, I have confirmed. He was at brunch at the Wynn this afternoon having an old-fashioned.
Oh, very
and,
nice.
And so as of right now, knock on... This isn't wood.
What is this, Formica?
Formica, maybe? Yeah, I don't know. It's like a...
A composite?
Some sort of composite. Yeah, knock on whatever you got. I don't have any wood in here. We don't have rich mahogany. These are modular studios. A lot of plastic.
Faux marble table, excuse me.
Polymers, if you will.
But wait, yeah, this isn't real marble?
Oh, it looks damn close.
Yeah, it looks really good.
I don't think it's in the budget. So he's fine. But like the last like five times he's got down to Vegas, he's almost died. And he did say that if he got sick... Because when he goes down to Vegas, he doesn't get, like, kind of sick. He gets sick.
Yeah.
And his immune system is terrible. So he did say that he was, like, there was some debate about whether or not this Vegas trip should happen. Shocking development. He rolls the dice. And now we just hope. Like, Thursday is the, I don't know what the odds are that he's here on Thursday, but that's the
plan. And that's where I was going to go next, because we always have to put odds up on this when it happens. It seems like he's giving himself enough of a buffer, but then again, this is very easily a situation that could end up being the full week for Rop.
Look, at this point, I think it's safe to assume that Rop is the Buffalo Bills and Las Vegas is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
It's close.
And he can even have a very good Josh Allen-like performance.
And it doesn't matter.
They're still Mahomes.
And maybe they win in the regular season. Occasionally, maybe he defeats Vegas when he doesn't have to get back to work. But when push comes to shove and... it's fourth and one. Let me tell you something. Vegas brings the pressure and Rob can't handle it. So I'm just saying, I'm not saying he won't be here on Thursday. Let's just say that I'm skeptical of a Thursday arrival of one. I'm waiting for like a Wednesday. I'm gonna say Wednesday about 12:15 in the afternoon. I'm expecting the group text. Guys, I'm really sorry. I can't believe it, but not feeling that well, throat sore. At the doctor now, getting some meds, keep you updated. And at that point, we know.
Yeah.
We know where the...
You might even get the night before preemptive throat feeling a little scratchy. Yeah. Hope I'm good to go by tomorrow.
Keep
something
you updated.
Like,
we know.
We get to keep you updated.
We know. We do like to keep the updated, keep the updates going. But we know. When that happens... You know where that update is. You know.
A man that can always be relied on to come back after his vacations and even his benders. Jason Tekanik here today.
Yeah.
You were down in the desert, not buying cars, but maybe watching other people buy cars.
Yeah, I went down to Bear Jackson. We've gone down there for the last handful of years, and it's just a series of bad decisions, thus proving that I cannot...
What's the best bad decision you can talk about on the air?
Most of them I can't. It's just one... let's just say, have you ever ridden in one of the Waymos?
No, but I know of them.
Yeah, the driverless, they're all Jaguars,
mm-hmm.
and they're the driverless Ubers.
Yeah.
And
they got a ton of them in San Francisco.
Yeah. Wait, like on the roads?
Yeah, they are driverless cars on the roads in San Francisco. There were actually two companies that were doing it. One was called Cruise, but that one shut down because of an accident or two, I think.
Yeah, it's Waymo. So we were taking Waymo after, it was a late night Waymo. And I just say in my current state, Waymo was very much scaring me. I had to sit in the middle.
Did you try and take the wheel from Waymo?
No. I sat in the back. I felt more secure in the back. And I was Waymo was freaking me out a little bit. And then we also found out that getting Waymo to pull over in the middle of a ride, very challenging.
Yeah.
Waymo doesn't just pull over whenever Waymo feels like it. And, you know, there was some panic.
There
some
are a panic couple
going
things.
On. At 3 in the morning, 3:30, and you're telling Waymo to pull over, Waymo doesn't necessarily just pull over. And, you know, and then you have to cancel the ride to get Waymo to pull over, and then Waymo leaves while you're trying to deal with things. He just leaves you, like, on the side of the road, and then you got to call another Waymo, because that Waymo apparently wants nothing to do with you.
I've heard there are a couple flaws with Waymos. I've never ridden in one myself, but one of the things, apparently, if they are on too narrow of a street and they are faced with head-on traffic, they just freeze. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to go backwards or on their own, or they don't have the override. So if you're going down, like, if you're trying to park on, like, a narrow street where there's parking on both sides and barely enough to get through and you're going heads up, that Waymo will just sit there forever.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a trip. But, it's a good trip. Most of it I will not talk about. I had a great time. I made a series, again, of increasingly terrible decisions. I'm here. I do not get sick. I do not...
Being sick's a choice.
It is a choice. I do not bail out. I will say this morning, the morning workout and then jiu-jitsu session, that was not maybe the best that I've ever put out there. I may at one point have crawled off the mat and laid down and just
done a little fetal position nap.
Yeah, there was about a minute or two left in the round, and I just was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to roll, and I may have rolled off to the side and then just laid there for a little bit and just kind of did some heavy breathing. But I'm here. I'm here. I'm feeling great. And I highly recommend it. If you ever want to go down and have a good time, Barrett Jackson, it's a good time.
But you didn't buy a car.
Oh, God, no.
Did your buddy buy a car?
No. A couple years ago, we got his uncle drunk, and he bought a Camaro. No one like, you got to get there. Like, the first couple days are the only time you can buy a car.
Okay.
So, like, the first,
because it picks up towards the end and then it's the super high end.
By the
stuff.
Time Friday rolls around, there's not a car that goes for less than 150 grand. And then when you get into like Friday night into Saturday, now you're into $500,000. You're into 2 million. We saw a couple go for 2 mil, which is kind of cool.
Now, what kind of rides were those? Were they classic? Were they newer and fancy?
You get a little bit. There was a Gullwing Mercedes, like a 64 SL Gullwing. That went for a couple mil. The brand new Corvette, number one of one, the very first one.
Oh.
That went for like 2 million. I'm trying to think. And then you get into some stuff like, there's some like Camaros with like matching parts, like the Yanko Camaros that are they made 150 of them, and it's like numbers matching, pristine. And then you'll get like an 80s Porsche, like the first time Porsche made a supercar.
Okay.
And you wouldn't know it by looking at it. It's like an 89 911, and you're like, why is
but
that?
Because it was the first
because
of its kind.
Because it was the first of its kind. Yeah. That ends up going. And so just to see people casually buying like $2 million cars, and they're like sitting right by you. Like, that's kind of a trip. And then a lot of rich old dudes with hot younger women.
Shocking.
Yeah, a lot of that. And they got displays and exhibits. And also, let me tell you this. Barrett Jackson, you know what they love? They love the POTUS.
Well, I remember you saying last year there was a Lambo previously owned by POTUS that went.
One of Trump's Lamborghinis that was like, he owned it like 12 years ago. Like, three people that owned it said, didn't matter. Like, people lost their S because they thought that Trump may show up for a car that he hasn't owned in a decade. But
why would that happen?
I don't know.
It's a good car. I have good memories in that one.
But there were, there's a lot of, patriotism. How about that? And in all the, my favorite thing that I saw was, you know, they have the big, I mean, it's enormous. Like, it takes you days to walk around this thing. They sell thousands of cars, and there's thousands of exhibits, and they sell boats and RVs, and it's just an S show. It's like the Super Bowl of indulgence. And in the booths, the amount of AI-generated Donald Trump merchandise was amazing. All signed, by the way, by Trump.
Yeah.
Like, they had him reimagined as Superman. They had him reimagined as Captain America.
Of course.
You name it. And that was... Those were kind of fun.
I saw something pretty unique in this regard on Twitter or X over the weekend. And it was a dude just sitting in a bar watching football. And the back of his T-shirt...
There's a lot of that.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, he's like Captain America.
I would like to know, like, because this thing is like the size of a poster.
Yeah.
who is buying the steroided out Donald Trump Captain America and like that's going to my
real
house.
Patriots, real tattoo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, continue.
There's a lot of those up somewhere.
No, but this dude had a QR code on his shirt sitting at the bar, and when you scan it, it takes you to a website with Donald Trump doing the patented Trump dance, and it just says, Donald Trump is your president.
Yeah.
And you pull that up when you scan this dude's shirt at the bar.
Oh, yeah. They had an off-road Porsche, like a rally car, but it was done up, like, it was painted with a bunch of Trump logos.
Okay.
And then there was also this, so I saw three of them. There was this rally Porsche, there was a Cybertruck, and something else, and it actually came with a Donald Trump mannequin in the passenger seat.
Nice.
The passenger seat, which was terrifying.
They just threw that in, huh?
Yeah, like, it's absolutely terrifying. And when the rally car went up on the stage, the crowd went freaking nuts. Like, they just, and then you got a lot of, there was a guy selling one of the high-end Camaros. And we have one of those cars that's supposed to go for like $1 million. The person gets on the mic and they talk about it. And at the end, we're not sure why buying $1 million Camaro makes America great again, but according to this gentleman, the only way to make America great is to buy Yanko Camaros. As he said it like three times during his speech.
Okay.
We're making America great again by buying $1 million 60 Camaros. And we're like, hey, you can't argue with that. So if you want to make America great again, just spend an exorbitant amount on an orange 67 Camaro and you'll be great.
Well, I do have one Trump story to add to this. I had a buddy who was at an event in Texas for work last week. It was like so he works for Tillamook. So he was at some like dairy farmers, like big thing. And Kevin McCarthy, the former Speaker of the House, was there. And he was, I don't know why, he had some connection to the industry. He's speaking on it, whatever. He tells a story about Trump, and I'd never heard this before. It's too detailed for it to be made up. He says that he has a giant self-portrait of himself in Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Not surprising there. But that there's one hand on it that's like wonky. And apparently the story behind it is that there was an artist who thought, dude, I could get this in his house or in his place or whatever.
Yeah.
So he finished this huge Trump self-portrait, but he left the hand off. And he's like, Mr. President, I will give this to you. Yeah. But if you want to keep it, I'll have to finish the hand and that'll cost you 10 grand.
Yeah.
And Trump's like,
no,
thank you. And apparently he hired someone for $500 to finish the hand, and it looks nothing like the rest of the painting, and it still sits there.
The merch booths at this place, I would like to believe it was for sale, because everything is for sale at this thing. The other good one was, do you know the monkey, the gas, was it the, God, it's like Richard something or other. They had a show on Discovery. It was like Gas Monkey Garage. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the show you speak of. I don't remember if that was the exact title, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and everyone hates them. I guess they're like giant jackwagons. They brought a custom like F-450. Like, think of the biggest small penis truck you can imagine. And probably put $15,000 worth of wheels and rims on this thing.
Ball, dude!
It was on like a 12... I mean, I know the lift on this thing, like, my eyes... I'm what, 6'3"? My head, my eyes were about even with the bottom of the door.
What kind of ladder do you need to get on that thing?
I don't know. But there's no way I would have had to grab it and do like a chin up to get in this thing. I mean, and then it was like,
is it street legal, something like this?
It can't be. And then purple flamed paint job.
Yeah.
Think of the most annoying, like, just toxic looking douchebag truck that you could imagine. And so they brought this thing. Obviously they had made it for Barrett Jackson. And we were talking to one of the guys, because it was like all the cars are on display and then they go to sell. So you can see everything before.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It goes across and we're looking at this thing. We're like, oh my God. And we were talking to the guy and he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, told us who brought it down. And he was like, yeah, like, they're hoping to get like $250 for this thing. And I was like, who on earth is going to buy this hunk of crap? But I was like, oh, you know. So like 2 days later, we're walking through. And once the car is sold, they go back on the lot and they have sold stickers on them.
Okay.
So you can walk around on Saturday and Sunday and see everything that's been sold, including the stuff that's like $2 million. And it has the sold sticker on it. And it'll tell you how much. Would you care to guess how much... the small penis purple flame spiked truck went for.
I'm going to guess more than it was at than they were asking. Let's say $400K.
$33,000.
Oh. So I was going to ask that if you don't there's yeah, no floor on these
no reserve.
No floor. It just they go there's no reserve. It is what it is. You put it up there and it sells. $33,000. There's $33,000 worth of tires. I was laughing, and the best part is the guy who was manning the little area when he told, because we walked up, we're like, oh my God. He goes, dude, they were so pissed. He goes, they were just fuming.
And
that
can,
was
can the, you imagine being oh in the position God. Where you think that what you're doing is going to generate loads of wealth and then seeing that you actually just
33 grand
pissed it all away?
Just kneecapped.
Well, not just money, but time put oh, into that. How the, long well,
and
did
the,
it
and the blow to your
that?
Ego, too, yeah. thinking this is going to be really rad and someone else is going to think so, too, and it just isn't.
Like, I felt terrible. We met some really cool people that had done their first custom build, and it was like on like an early 60s Corvette. Gorgeous. I mean, so beautiful. Painstakingly, thing was a work of art, and they were saying they were hoping for 400. Like, we hope we get 400. You know, if we get 450, it'll be amazing. And this thing was stellar. It was gorgeous. And we watched it go across the block, and we had talked to them the day before. It went for like $220, and you're like, they probably took a bath, and it was their first one they'd built. Like, those guys I felt terrible for. Like, they were sweet guys, and it was like their first venture into this. But to see the douche truck go for $33,000.
Someone got a deal, baby.
I'll tell you what, it was the best part. It was like one of the best parts of the week.
I want to know who ended up getting the winning bid on that Buick.
I don't know, but it was amazing. So
that had to have been the cheapest car sold at the entire auction.
Oh, no, $33,000? Dude, they used everything. We saw a Ford Pinto. It was like redone. It was a nice Ford Pinto, $9,000.
Yeah.
Like they've got, if you go there on early in the auction, you can buy.
Yeah. So
you can buy like normal cars. I mean, you see cars that are out there and they said that aren't in great shape.
Of mine really wants, so he restores Broncos and he really wants to go down there. I think it's Broncos. Shout out Parker who does this regularly, but he's terrified of the situation where he doesn't get in. Or doesn't get back as much as he put in. You know what I mean? Which is very much in play. He's like, I think I could sell one of these older store guys, but like, if I didn't, I can't afford it.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday is the big stuff. But earlier than that, you walk around and that's kind of the cool part is you see like, just, you know, someone had a truck or you see some cool old Blazers or Broncos or, again, we saw a Ford Pinto. I mean, you see that they had a bat helicopter from the Batman TV show.
Oh, and love it.
Yeah, you know, there's some crap. I mean, there's some cars that literally look like crap, and you're like, oh my God, who bought this? And you see it sold for like $6,000. You're like, well, for $6,000?
What's the cheapest sticker you saw down there?
$6,000.
Is it that's the lowest? Yeah.
$6,000 was there were some bicycles and stuff, like old motorbikes. But I think $6,000 was the cheapest car that I saw. And like I said, the Pinto was $9,000. The $6,000 was like, I don't know, it was like someone took like an old Jeep and they tried to make it into a military thing. And they had like spray painted it and there was like fake bullet holes on it. It's terrible. It went for someone bought a hunk of crap for $6,000. And you don't know when you buy down there. I mean, once it's bought, it's yours. So
there's no recourse. It's not like going to a dealership and they're like, oh, I got a lemon. I need to send it back.
No, you can buy it. And it's, you know, that's so when you buy one for $6,000, be prepared that you might be getting a $6,000 car. But yeah, it's fun. We go down there every year, and it's a lot of fun. So, shout out to all my guys, Liquor Rick, who is the captain of this thing.
There you go.
Found out too that Liquor Rick raw dogs flights.
Oh, really?
Just weird. A sweet old man with no headphones, no nothing,
no book,
no
newspaper. No.
I couldn't believe
he really
it
when does
I,
the thing.
I did. I was like, man. I quizzed him on it for about 15 minutes. He was puzzled that I was puzzled. No.
Well, and that's the amazing thing is he's been raw dogging these flights without realizing he's raw dogging flights.
That's what
it wasn't part of a trend for Rick.
Rick's like in his 70s.
Yeah. This is.
And
just
so I was like, hey, you're cool now.
Old I'm hat
like,
for him.
Yeah. He's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, this is the new trend. He's like, eh. Told you I'm cool. Shout out Liquor Rick, raw dog and flights, left and right.
Well, as usual, a really big Monday on the show. We will have our stock watch presented by Schulze a little bit later. And there's been some coaching carousel news, both in the pro game and in the college game that's of interesting note. But the big thing, of course, conference championship weekend. We will start to dive in with that next. Our conference championship charcuterie coming up next right here on The Fan. Back to primetime. Isaac in Vegas may never return or may return and never go back. We'll have to see about all that coming up a little bit later in the week. Big show today because, well, a programming announcement, and not one of our programming, but on the national golf situation, TGL Tuesdays moved to Mondays.
Yeah,
so tonight,
yeah.
You get the big tilt between Tiger's Jupiter Lynx and Rory's Boston Common.
I'm used to not carrying on a Tuesday, and now
you have to not carry on a Monday.
Not carry on a Monday.
That's exactly right.
It's like the WNBA all over again.
So that is what the entire sports world will have their eyes trained on this evening. However, yesterday, I think we've got to start with the AFC Championship game. Well, that's the one that came down to the wire. That's the one with a million storylines. Yeah. It is starting to feel a little bit like, at least to me, and other people have said this as well, but like those old Colts-Patriots rivalries with Peyton and Brady. And Josh Allen and the Bills have been doing amazing things, but they just keep running into the same brick wall that is the Chiefs, and it's rather amazing to watch.
Well, they're the Karl Malone right now and the Utah Jazz of the NFL. And you look at how many legacies were ruined by Michael Jordan, or how many legacies were ruined by Tom Brady that you didn't get your Super Bowl, or those Dallas Cowboy teams, right? I mean, those Buffalo Bill teams that went to four Super Bowls and never won one and kind of ran into those Cowboy teams that were really, really stinking good. And, you know, this idea, too, that the Bills can't beat the Chiefs.
They did it like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, they can beat the Chiefs. They just haven't in the postseason.
Yeah.
But most of these games have been, you know, by an inch or two. So this idea that Buffalo can't get over the hump, or that they never will get over the hump, or that they need to do something drastic. This is like when you remember you would watch like the old G.I. Joe cartoons or any sort of thing, and like the evil guy would have this plot to take over the world, and he comes this close, right? And then he never tries it again.
Right.
You're like, why not go back to the plan that just about worked?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Buffalo. I've heard a lot today about how Buffalo needs to do this and Buffalo needs to do that, and they've got to do something dramatic and shake it up. I say, why? Like, Buffalo is right there. I mean, a couple years ago, they had it beat. There was 17 seconds left?
Yep.
And they couldn't get it done. The truth of the matter is, Buffalo is a really, really good team, and Josh Allen is a phenomenal MVP level quarterback. And the truth of the matter is, they just keep running into the best team we've seen since the New England Patriots, the best organization we've seen since the New England Patriots. And they're running into arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. And Steve Spagnuolo, who does not get the credit he deserves, but someone brought this up and I thought it was a great point. How many things have to go right in order for you to have like a dynasty like this? If Spags had never gotten that job and flamed out when he got his chance coaching the Giants, right, and that thing was a disaster, or if he was younger, Spags would have been gone years ago. The fact that he's older and is a retread, he is allowed to stay. Like, look at like Aaron Glenn. You're telling me Aaron Glenn is a better defensive coordinator than Steve Spagnuolo? No, he's not. But he's young and he's energetic and we haven't seen it before, and he's going to get a crack at it.
Yeah.
And the Lions lost both their coordinators, and the Chiefs don't. One, they have the Andy Reid offense, so it's always going to be there.
As long as he's there, that's going to be fine.
Exactly. And that's the same thing with Bill and his defense in New England.
Yep.
And then on the offensive side of things, or on the defensive side of things, they have Spags, who just, I'm telling you, as great as Patrick Mahomes is, and look, he wins this one. He's already in the conversation. Like, it's Brady, and I think it's fair if you want to throw out Mahomes. It's the greatest start to a career we've ever seen.
Well, they just said last night last night's win, that was his 17th playoff win in just his first 17 seasons.
Yes.
That's the second most all-time behind Brady. It puts him past Montana already.
Realize that at this point, the floor of Patrick Mahomes' career, the lowest it can get is an overtime loss in the AFC Championship game. He has been a starting quarterback for 7 years. He has lost twice in the playoffs, or excuse me, three times in the playoffs. Once in the Super Bowl with no offensive line, which, by the way, he single-handedly almost kept him in that game. And then he's lost twice to Tom Brady and Joe Burrow in overtime in the AFC title game.
Yep.
That is the floor of his career. I'm sorry. I don't, whatever you think of Kansas City, and believe me, my national nightmare continues. I was all on board the Josh Allen stuff. You cannot deny at this point the greatness of Kansas City. And it really is three parts. It is Andy Reid, four parts, because it's Andy Reid. It's Spags, who I think has the last two titles are more on Spags than they are on Pat Mahomes. That defense carried them to the last two championships, and then it's Mahomes' magic. And then I think you throw in the fact that their front office, their ability to find players and revamp that defense,
yeah.
and keep it, whether it's finding McDuffie, whether it's getting Bolton, whether it's drafting Karlaftis and putting these pieces in place.
Karlaftis has been so good, by the way.
Revamping their offensive line. You know, finding Xavier Worthy, who this year you kind of thought was going to be their deep threat, and it kind of seemed like he was a little bit of a bust. And then as the year went on, he wasn't their deep guy. He just became a gadget guy, but he became a huge part of their offense. Mm-hmm. The retreads of you know, whether it's Juju Smith-Schuster or Hopkins, they just have done this phenomenal job.
They get a little something out of it. Like, they can squeeze a little bit of juice out of something that seems like it's kind of done and dead, and
yes,
then they're great at finding the new up-and-comers, and then they figure out the cap stuff somehow. Yes.
And then you have just the true greatness that is Pat Mahomes. And despite all of that, Buffalo is two suspect calls and just I want to give Kansas City credit, but it's inept short yardage plays. There's no excuse for Buffalo not to be able to get a yard. And so with all the other stuff that happened to the Bills, and I hate buying into the narrative of officials and all that. You know me, over 20 years, I try not to sit here and say officials cost anyone games, because I think that's the most simplistic way to do it. But I do get why people get frustrated, because it does feel like every time there's a close call, it goes Kansas City's way. I'm stunned that on replay, the Worthy catch was ruled a catch. It hit the ground.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that the Kincaid, I'm not even mad about the Josh Allen first down, which he clearly got.
That was the hardest one to see.
Kincaid got the first down of the play.
That seemed easy to see.
There always seems to be something, and maybe it's just that when you're that good, luck finds your way, right? Like, it's just when you're that prepared and you're that good and you don't make mistakes. I mean, that first turnover that they had was the fluky one. They say that was like the first turnover they've had in, like, you know, it was like 80, 90 possessions. Like, they don't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
They don't make mistakes. They're fundamentally sound. They don't get fooled on things. And so I don't want to root for Kansas City. I can't just sit up here and say that it was refs, or that it's
or the Bills blowing it or something. I mean,
Kansas City is just the most buttoned down organization, and they win in the margins. And that's maybe the frustrating part, is it's not like you're just getting your ass kicked by this superior entity that you can't compete against. You just get beat by a team that's cleaner, sharper, and wins in the margins, and it feels like you're there. It feels like you're going to kick the football, you're Charlie Brown, and they just pull the rug out from underneath you.
One stat before we go to break, and then we'll pick up more of this matchup, some crucial plays, some crucial calls, but Mahomes has played in 20 playoff games. In 11 of them, he won and never trailed going into the fourth.
Yeah.
The other 9, he trailed in the fourth quarter and came back to win 6 of them. And in the other 3, in one of them, he forced OT and never got the ball. In the other, he forced OT and ended up losing. Like, as you mentioned, one of those was to Joe Burrow. One of those was to Tom Brady. It's unbelievable. Yes. what he's done.
It's the greatest start to a career, maybe in any sport. And if they finish it off, he'll have done something that no one has ever done. And that'll be 4 Super Bowls in 7 years. And, I mean, look, it's not 7 for Tom, but he's 29 years old. Like, he's got another decade of this. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to hit him. So, yep. He's, you know, and he's extremely healthy and durable. He ain't going anywhere. And, by the way, this is probably the worst version of Kansas City. And yet they still won 14, 15 games, and here they are again. And if this version of it wins, throw up your hands, then maybe you just can't beat them. Maybe it's just that good.
Crucial plays at crucial times, sliding doors and sliding coverages. That's coming up next. First, Schulte with SportsCenter. Sook, the show is rigged. It's rigged. No bump back music in the stack, either Gremlins in the board, Swag is rigging it against us. It's definitely not Schulte's fault. It's someone else's fault. I'm sure of this.
Well, it's probably just my fault.
I'm blaming someone else, Schulte.
I'll just say, I think the talk of the officials, and look, I said it after the Ohio State Oregon game. I didn't like the call at the end.
The OPI one?
The OPI one. Like, calls are subjective, right? And every one of those is a subjective call. I thought that there were 2 Bills first downs. I didn't think it was a catch on Worthy's part, but it went to review, and it is what it is. But much like I said with the Ohio State Oregon game, like, that's such a lazy narrative to just focus on that. Yes, those were big plays, but I can point to a dozen big plays that throughout the course of that game that Kansas City made and Buffalo didn't. I'll go back to the one early on where it was Curtis Samuel coming across the middle, and Josh Allen in the first half I thought was very average, mm-hmm. and he short-armed the ball. It was low. If Samuels, you know, grabs that, you know, he's off and running.
Yeah, that could have been a 30-yard gain.
And it was a drive killer, and then, you know, they give the ball back to Kansas City. Kansas City goes down and scores. Allen was not sharp in the first half at all. I thought their short yardage play was horrific. Just in general, I thought for a team that was running the ball as well as they were, especially in the third quarter.
Just run a play.
Run a play.
Like, it was weird because they have a quarterback who you could certainly do tush push type stuff with, but they don't draw that up. They just kind of put him behind and like let him churn his legs, and like that's not really a play.
I just thought their stuff was horrific. I thought Kansas City in short yardage with the ability to get Mahomes out on the edge, I thought was fantastic. I thought that Buffalo kept falling for that. We can talk about the play where they had it third and whatever it was, third and nine with a chance to get the ball back. I'm talking after all the shenanigans went down, right? And they give the ball back to Kansas City. They had Kansas City third and long. Mm-hmm. It was third and 10, third and nine, something like that. And Buffalo can't get off the field. Yeah. And they throw that little ball to P. Ryan, and sure enough, out the gate, and thanks for coming, game over.
Yeah, they have an answer for everything.
You know, there's a million ways. We can talk about the last play, you know, with it, that Kincaid, again, should have caught the ball. But can we talk about the fact that Spags drew up something that absolutely fooled the protection scheme, whether you want to blame that on Josh Allen, whether you want to blame that on the center, whether you want to blame it on basic protection rules? That was a blitz as drawn up with the offensive set that Buffalo put out there that was basically impossible for Buffalo to pick up. And now, could they have handled it better? Yes, but they were not going to pick up that blitz. And so that was a case of offense versus defense, and that play was... it wasn't decided, but the play was decidedly tilted just on the inception of what Buffalo was doing, the formation they lined up, and what Kansas City brought to the table.
And I thought this was fascinating. So let me just reset here, because we're talking about the final fourth down play, the one that gets chucked up to Kincaid late. Yeah. There was a lot of social media and online discourse about this, television discourse as well. But, you know, that was the one where they had Khalil Shakir doing the orbit route, as they call it, where he runs to the quarterback and then goes around him and goes back the other way. And some people were out there immediately screaming, well, if Josh Allen just throws it there, we can say that was not possible, not happening. But tell me more about the protection that was set up and why, just from the outset, the formation was a problem for the Bills.
Yeah, that's why I said, I think that's why I love football. Football, it's a chess game, but with violence, right? And so to focus on the lazy narrative of, oh, well, you know, he should have caught the ball, or the ref did this, the ref did that. This is high-level chess stuff. And Spags is the best in the NFL at coming up with something when he needs it most, and he puts things in his pocket. And so when Buffalo comes up there, and if you want to be critical of something in Buffalo, I'd be critical of this. You know, in high-leverage situations, there is no one in the NFL that brings more exotic pressures than
Steve Spagnuolo.
So Buffalo comes up there with a 4-by-1, right? They go empty. Bunch formation to the left. They run four guys out there and one guy to the top. And everyone is condensed. Like, I mean, this is like what when Gruden would call it snug, right? Everyone is right there.
Yep.
Like, no one is split out wide. Just maybe a few yards beyond the hash mark. When you do that, basically what you allow the defense to do is disguise what they want to do. Because the whole point of being spread out, the reason why people go empty, the people why they go five wide, is because it makes the defense declare what they're doing. But when you bring everything in snug like that, you basically allow the defense to just keep their cards close to their vest, because you don't have to cheat. Safeties, more often than not, will give away what the defense is doing.
Almost out of necessity, because they have to make sure they can get there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But in this case, you don't have to.
Right.
So just from that point alone, I guarantee you that if you sat down with Buffalo today and they would be like, we outthought the room. We should have known that Spags was going to come up with something. The other one too that you look at, so when they come out in that bunch formation, right, you got four to the left. Now Shakir, he does the little orbit route.
Yeah.
So he starts out in the bunch formation.
Like in
the
slot there, like tight end. Yeah.
Yeah. And he comes back into the back and then peels back. And that's the one where, you know, who was it? Someone had the dot and they were like, oh, you should throw to this guy.
That was Benjamin Solak, ESPN.
No offense, but from RG3 to Michael Irvin, to anyone that thinks that Josh Allen could have or should have thrown the ball to him, we can all have different opinions and I can respect different opinions. That's a dumb opinion. It's just dumb. That's not an option. Well, I can respect you having a different point of view. That's a dumb point of view. It's not based in reality. If Josh Allen turns to pivot to that, one, he's going to get hit right in the chops. And two, yeah. even if he were to get that ball off, which he probably wasn't, he's throwing it 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and it's some sort of weird floater pass.
It's a pirouette. He has the potential to throw it behind, backwards, fumble it out of bounds.
It's absurd. But what you can see at the beginning, and I said this is why this play was over basically from the beginning, is Kansas City had four guys on the left side of the ball showing you a zone look, four to cover four. Buffalo had four guys out there, and Kansas City had four to that side. Football tends to be a numbers game. And when there's four to cover four, it's really hard to bring pressure off that side. You have to then have someone, whether it's a linebacker or a DN or someone, bail to take that. If you look at the top of the Bills formation, you know how many guys they had at the top of that formation? One.
Yeah.
Do you know how many Kansas City players were on that side? Four.
And what should that tell you?
If you have 4-1 and you have 4-4, guess where the pressure's coming from? 99% of the time, the pressure is coming from the 4-1. And I'll even give you, if you want to say it's 3-1, see, I count the defensive end because in Spags' defense, that defensive end can drop. And by the way, one of the defensive linemen in this formation did end up dropping mm-hmm. out of the pressure look. It was actually the right tackle, or I guess it would have been the left side defensive tackle. Three technique, he bailed. But immediately, that is telling you, I'm begging you to look over here. I want you to look over here. Look over here. And it's coming from, that is what Spags does. And Josh Allen and the Bills and whatever their protection schemes, they slid the line the wrong way. And they got baited by Kansas City. And I don't know if that was a case of, that was just what they saw and it was a mix up. I don't know if they slid to Chris Jones, because if you slide the entire line to the right, yes, you're probably leaving Chris Jones unblocked on the end. Not a great idea, but if you are going to leave empty rushers, free rushers, they have to come from the outside. It's like football 101. You cannot allow two free rushers coming from your interior. When you do that, the idea that Josh Allen can do anything other than keep backing up and then throw the Hail Mary to Kincaid.
Which, and he somehow almost and still somehow pulled it off, almost did it, but had almost no shot.
But yes, that play was basically over at the beginning when Buffalo, their center, and Josh Allen did not recognize the pressure look. And that was, how many times do we have to say it? That is the best defensive coordinator in the NFL when you need to mm-hmm. get a stop. Because if you want to go back to the Super Bowl, just last year, remember what San Francisco was doing? Driving at the end of the game. And what did they do? They came up with an exotic pressure just like this. Mm-hmm. And remember what the right guard and right tackle for San Francisco
did? They got all out of whack, all confused. They ended up fighting each other on Twitter over it.
And we ended up with a free rusher.
Yep.
And guess what happened? Thanks for coming. Ball game.
Yep.
That is the exact same thing. This is two.
God, I didn't even think about that comparison. That is spot on.
This is two. And by the way, the right guard for Buffalo ends up blocking nobody.
And that's exactly what happened to that Spencer Burford for the yes. Niners last year.
Exactly. Yeah.
No man's land.
No man's land. Because he got caught in a blender. And when you don't have your protection rules right and you are fooled at the snap.
Yeah, and he got caught between what he was getting told to do and what his instinct was telling him to
do. And the moment that ball was snapped, you can look at it. The right guard, his guy comes across his face and doesn't come. He settles. He goes back. And the linebacker bails. And at that split second, you know what's going through his mind? Oh, fudge. Because he knows coming to his right side is not one, but two unblocked players. And that is the end of the Buffalo Bills season. And that's not even true because, again, they had a chance to get off the field.
They did.
When Kansas City got the ball back, they had a 3rd and 10 and their defense couldn't get off field. But it ended that possession based on that. So any other talk, we can sit here and we can talk about officials, but this is the beauty of the NFL is Kansas City showed you one thing, brought another. It fooled the Buffalo Bills, whether that was the O-line or Allen or the offensive coordinator or all things combined. They were outcoached in that play, and that's the beauty of the NFL. Because that right there is the difference in that ballgame. You know, lots of other things could have happened, but that's a way bigger play, in all honesty, than saying that a 6-inch spot was off. Or, I mean, because that's what you're talking about. You're talking about very, very sure. marginal things that could have gone either way. I personally think that Buffalo got those two.
Mm-hmm. I at least think they got the first one.
But the things they could control, because you can't control the spot.
Nope.
What you can control is your protection rules.
And what plays you call when you're in 3rd and 4th and inches. Yeah. We'll put a bow on this game. Plus, you mentioned the job Spags did. Want to get into a little later what Vic Fangio did to help contain Jaden Daniels and that Commanders offense. We'll do that next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan.
One other thing, too, on that last, that fourth down play, the 2 minute. And again, very, very nitpicky. They snapped that ball with 18 seconds left on the play clock.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of the 2 minute warning. So that's not an issue. Really, and I, again, would love to sit in a meeting and just be a fly on the wall when Buffalo breaks down that film, because I think they're going to have a huge problem with their formation. They're going to have a huge problem with how their protection was called.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to sit there and be like, God, why didn't we check out of this? We had 18 seconds. And at least with 18 seconds, you can at least make sure that everyone is on the same page. I know the crowd's loud. And if you watch right at the snap of the ball too, the corner and the safety bail out on the bunch side, which is, again, a 100% indicator that the pressure is coming from the other way. They're just going to look back on that play, and it was really just – it was doomed from the start, and yet it's still it should have been caught.
Yeah.
I get it's a tough play, but you want to get to the Super Bowl?
It should have been.
It should have been. Kansas City makes tough plays.
Yep.
And Kincaid is a really good player. He needed to have made that catch, and so people to say that he shouldn't have or that's a tough catch – dude, that's Sean Connery the Rock stuff, right? Losers go home and talk about what could have been, and mm-hmm. winners go home and, you know, the prom queen.
Yeah, but Kincaid had to turn around
and
get back towards the line of scrimmage trying to get an amazing, prayer of the throw that Josh Allen was able to get off.
I could care less.
It hit him between his two arms.
I remember vividly my offense, we were playing Dwight Freeney, and Dwight Freeney was absolutely brutalizing us. And I remember my O-line coach coming over and telling our tackle, I understand it's hard. Like, that's the best player in the game. You either find a way to do it or we'll find someone. Like, it being hard is not an excuse. If you want to say that something was hard, it was a difficult play, you don't get to win the Super Bowl.
No, I'm saying that's like an impossible play.
It's not an impossible play. That is a tough play that if you are a big-time player, does anyone doubt that if that's Kansas City, and this is why Kansas City wins Super Bowls, Antonio Holmes in the Super Bowl with Pittsburgh, one of the best catches you'll ever see, toes down. That's why Pittsburgh wins that Super Bowl. The difference between winning and losing these games is players, and not even necessarily the Patrick Mahomes or the Josh Allens of the world.
No, the David Tyrees,
yes,
or the Danny Amendolas.
There is no tougher catch ever in the history of the NFL than David Tyree. And David Tyree was a nobody. But that dude made an unbelievable play, and the Giants are Super Bowl champs because of it. Not solely because of that, but they don't have that opportunity. And by the way, if Kincaid catches that, Buffalo still has to go down. You know, let's not say that Kansas City can't get a stop, or that, again, Buffalo couldn't stop him after they Kansas City got the ball back.
But to compare him to Mark Andrews is just stupid. Come on.
Yes, like
those are apples and oranges.
But at the same time, there's not a player on that field that would look at that play and say that that's acceptable, that he didn't make it, or that there was an excuse that he didn't make it. Yes, he had to came back to it. Hit him in the arms. You got to make you want to win a Super Bowl, you got to make that. I hate the argument of it was hard. That's why I said picking up that blitz is really hard. And there really probably wasn't a good way with normal protection rules. Because again, everything is predicated on protection rules. We all, as an offensive lineman in the course of an offense, we have to operate in rules. So whether that's one back rules, empty rules, right? All of those things exist. And I don't know what the protection rules are in Buffalo, but in an empty formation, right? And that's what it was. Because yes, Shakir came into the back, but they didn't check. They didn't audible to keep
him. It didn't seem like it was an option to have him stay there.
Certainly didn't seem like it.
Right.
Right? So once I'm operating on empty protection rules, I do know that I have to block inside out. And they didn't. So that's what I'm saying. Is that a hard blitz to pick up? Absolutely. Is it possible to pick up that entire blitz? Probably not. Whatever you do, you're probably going to get a free rusher. Is it acceptable that two free rushers come right there? No. No, it is not. And that's why you don't win a Super Bowl, because something that was hard, you didn't do. Something that was hard, Kansas City, you did.
They find a way.
And so don't look at officials. Don't look anywhere else. Look at that. Kansas City made hard plays. Third and 10. I want to say it might have even been third and 9 to third and 11.
Yeah.
That is a really hard down to pick up. And they threw to their third string running back.
Yep.
And they picked it up. What are the odds of, you know, what are the third and 10? You know, it's something like 15%, 20%. It's a very hard play to pick up. And yet Kansas City did. So that's focus on that, not on officials or some, you know, mysterious, what would you say? Like some mysterious,
rigging
of the game. There's way more going on in football games, and there's some really, really good info out there if you want to dig into why these games are won and lost. And when you have two high level teams like this, and Josh Allen and the Bills played great.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the second half, it's won and lost in the margins. It's won and lost on those little things. And hopefully we're giving you just a little taste. And when I brought up the 49er thing, again, go back to it. If Kansas City wins this Super Bowl, you can now look at this and say that final play where they closed out Brock Purdy and the Niners,
mm-hmm.
and this right here that closed out essentially the Buffalo Bills, that's essentially the same thing. It's the same sort of confusion that you got that you got an offensive line caught up in.
Yeah.
That's not accident. When something happens over and over again, that's not accident. That's preparation. That's greatness. That is really, really smart defensive scheming and knowing when to bring out something unique that's going to put you in a bind.
Speaking of great scheming, the text line tells us the Super Bowl matchup this year is evidence that all you need to be great in this league is a crusty old Italian defensive coordinator. We will get into what Vic Fangio did against the Commanders next, because he did a great job, too. Defensive coordinators, you might be able to say, were the MVPs of these games, at least from the coaching staffs. But coming up next, you need to get to the coaching carousel. Is Ohio State too petty to win another national championship, too cheap, or maybe both? We'll talk about that coming up next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan.